This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Peppermint Twist. That was like 1961 or 62. I remember that song. I was in high school. Joey D and the Starliner. Wow. And they're from this, Big Ed tells me they're from the local area, Tampa Bay area. Ed, is that right? Wow.
Pretty cool. Yeah, Joey D has actually stopped in here a few times.
Has he really? How old is the guy by now? About 80?
I didn't really ask.
No,
but,
I know.
I did get a photo with him.
Anyway, great song. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, still kicking, and along with Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us. It is Friday, November the 19th. This is the last weekend before Thanksgiving. You got to get your turkey. You got to find out how expensive it is and if it's there. I wonder if they're going to run out of turkeys this year. Everything else we're scared about. We'll be talking in a few minutes with Robert Pondicio. He is with the American Enterprise Institute. He wrote an article for Newsweek. Education is progressive. Schools are conservative. Now, what does he mean by that? Education is progressive, but schools are conservative. We'll talk to him and find out. And House Democrats have passed that Build Back Better BS bill. And God forgive them, because they don't know what they're doing. We're going to talk a little bit about it and where it's going to go after this. And we'll get some thoughts on it as well a little bit later on from the proprietor of the barber pole, Andrew Ceresi. See what he thinks about spending all that money. And multi-trillion dollar spending bills that just passed certainly bode well for the concept of socialism, don't they? Don't they? But what really happens in a socialist state? We're going to take a look. We're going to talk about it. Stay tuned for that. And in our ultimate top 10, we have a goodie. The top 10 deadliest animals in the world. Deadliest. You're going to be surprised at some of them. Stay tuned for that as well. By the way, Freedom Works is sponsored in part by the best barbershop in Tampa Bay for men. They don't cut women's hair there. They probably do a doggone good job of it, considering that two of the three are women that are cutting your hair, I would think. But it's a men's shop, Andrew's Master Barbershop, been around for many, many years. It's the best place you can go for a haircut. It's also, I think, probably the best rate you'll get for a haircut, guys. And if you're a senior, it's even cheaper. It's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. Call for your appointment, please, 727-733-3773. And we always tip our hat to the show that precedes us because they do such a wonderful job. Good Morning Clearwater. They're on Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m., and you better start out your day with them or you're making a huge mistake, Paul and Tracy Allen and the gang. All right, so they passed the bill. Now, you knew that they had the votes. Kevin McCarthy got up and did an eight-hour, what do you call that when you stand up there and you talk and you keep control of the House? Anyway, he went on and on for 8 hours. It was a losing cause, however. He's a Republican and the leader of the House. He's technically the minority leader in the House. He spoke for 8 hours, lasting into Friday morning. He started last night. I wonder if we could talk for 8 hours, Ed, you and I, if we had to, you know, do an eight-hour marathon show without getting laryngitis and without putting everybody to sleep. That would be hard. Anyway, he did it. He had his final case against Biden's social spending bill. He described it as the single most reckless and irresponsible spending bill in our nation's history. That may actually be true because it's so expensive. So it could clearly be the most reckless bill. They say it's going to only cost, and I use the word only with a joke, $1.75 trillion. But you know what? That's over a bunch of years, and I guarantee you it's not going to only cost $1.75 trillion if it passes. And I say if, because now they got to go to the Senate. Thank God we have the Senate, and right now it's a 50-50 Senate. But as you probably know, there are two Democrats that may vote against it, and that'll screw the whole thing up for Nancy and the gang in the House. So we're hoping that they have some common sense and realize, first of all, nobody read the bill. So nobody that voted for it one way or the other knew really what was in it. That's almost, what's the word, negligence, you know, when you don't read it and know what's in it and you vote for it. They did the same thing, of course, when they shoved through the Obamacare bill. Even Nancy admitted that they didn't read it. She said you have to pass it first before you can know what's in it to get past. She said to get past the fog. Remember that?
Isn't it like 4,000 pages or something ridiculous?
It's at least, I'm not sure. I thought I heard 500, but you know what? Everybody stops at page 3 and yeah, your eyes glaze over.
So each member gets a copy, right? That whole stack?
Oh, yeah. Now, what
you... What I would do, I would slip there in there about page 1 or 248, a little note that says, mention this word at the hearing and we'll give your family $10 million.
Yes.
And see how many actually see that note buried in there. Like, you know, they used to do that in school, you know?
Yes.
His teacher would hide something in his room and you said you read it.
Yes.
See how many actually find
You had a pretty sharp teacher that did that, now that I think about it. They didn't read it. They didn't read it. They don't really care. Think about it. They know that they have to create dollars to pay for it. It's just, it's all, what do you call it? It's just, it's trickery. There's nothing there. And they know that it's harmful to give away things to people that the private sector can provide if you want it. It's always more expensive because you've got to pay the middleman, which is the government. You've got to pay all those people that are running things to distribute that to the people that are getting it. So it's going to cost more. That's why healthcare costs more when the government gets involved. Healthcare, they're talking about childcare. Oh, really? Is the family just going to give up on personal responsibility now? Because you're going to get provided childcare by the government? Really? That's responsible that the government is going to come along rather than you working something out yourself? That's called personal responsibility, taking care of your own kids. I don't want to spend money for somebody else's kids. I don't think I should have to. The parents are the responsible party. And yet, this is going to be, by the way, it won't survive anyway in the Senate. That's one of the first things that will come out because it's so expensive. But you see, that's all part of socialism. We're going to talk about what happens when you have a government creep. You know, they continue to creep forward and forward until you have a socialistic state. And we'll talk about that. But we're going to take our break right now. And we're going to actually talk about education. And we're going to talk with Robert Pondicio, who says education is progressive, but the schools are conservative.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Hello out there. Tune in on TAN Talk for Connecting Caregivers with me, Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers. We will find resources, education, and a shoulder for the caregivers. I know it's tough, but we can work it out together. Look forward to you tuning in, where you'll have tons of information. Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver.
That's Connecting Caregivers Radio, Fridays from 1 to 2 p.m.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
I took my troubles down to Madam Ruth. You know that gypsy with the gold cap tooth. She's got a hat on 34th and Vine.
Hey, we are back. And by the way, there was one Democrat that voted against the bill. So we salute him. Jared Golden of Maine. I don't know why he voted against it. Maybe he's such a socialist that he didn't think there was enough in there, but he voted against it. Here was the vote tally, 220 to 213. Now, if my math is right, that's only 433 members, but there are 435, so two people were playing hooky. Not that it would have made any difference at that point.
Well, that one guy that voted against is not going to get a free meal tonight. Got to pay for his own dinner.
Yes, he will. He better avoid Nancy Pelosi.
Mm-hmm. He's going to get the stink eye.
I'll tell you.
She'll give him the stink eye all day.
Oh, yeah. She really will. Well, we're delighted to have Robert Pondicio join us. He's a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He has penned a piece in Newsweek magazine, Education is Progressive, and Schools are Conservative. Robert, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
It is our pleasure. And first of all, tell me what you mean by that, that education is progressive, but schools are conservative.
Well, I think this will be intuitive and make sense to people once I describe it. I mean, you know, I'm the son of a mechanic, grew up on Long Island, but it was always preached to me that school is how you get ahead. So, you know, my mom and dad, even though they weren't particularly well-educated themselves, insisted that I go to school, work hard, go to college, et cetera, because that was how, you know, that's the American dream, as it were. That is, by definition, progressive. And I'm making air quotes around the word progressive, meaning it that's how you make progress in American life. But schools themselves are fairly conservative, right? In other words, there are rules, there are standards. You know, it's commonly noted that schools look the same now as they did 50, even 100 years ago. Kids in desks, teachers in front of the room. A lot of people in my line of work complain about that. They say, isn't this terrible? School hasn't changed at all. Well, I mean, the point that I would make is that you have to ask yourself why it hasn't changed. Not as if we can't do it differently, but there's something about you know, the what I would call the conservative value of schools, you know, small c conservative, that resonates with people. It's a cultural habit. If it hasn't changed, it's because we don't want it to change. And the reason I wrote this piece is because, you know, you have to look at this as we do everything through a political lens. And if the Democrats have kind of stepped on rakes in places like Virginia and New Jersey and elsewhere on school issues, it's, I think, because they misperceive this. They view school as progressive. And so when you try to you know, push things too far, you know, for quote social justice, then voters react badly.
Yeah. I think you make an excellent point. I'm thinking about it. Because the brick-and-mortar schools are pretty much the way they were when I was going to school. Your kids come in, they accumulate in a room, they sit down in desks. Maybe they got a computer in front of them now. We didn't. But, you know, part of it is the social experience, is it not? These kids, you know, first get into a group setting, a lot of them, in first grade. And so part of it is just learning how to react and enact and coexist with other people. That's a part of the early training for kids as well. So in a way, I would think the traditional conservative approach is important socially.
Yeah, and I'm making a distinction, maybe too fine of a distinction between what I call small C conservative, small P progressivism. In other words, we tend to immediately default to a kind of political definition of those two words. But look, your point is exactly right. If you think about it, a school for very young children is the very first place you go in American life without your parents. You know, in other words, it's the first relationship you have with a civic institution. I mean, yeah, you have other influences. There's family, there's church, for example. But school is the first place that you go by yourself without mom and dad.
Yeah, exactly right.
One of the reasons we value it is because of that socialization. I mean, even, look, I'm a unrepentant school choice guy. I like school choice. I like vouchers. I like homeschooling and whatnot. But one of the reasons that school persists the way it has, largely unchanged, is exactly for that reason. We value not just the academics, but we do value that socialization experience.
Exactly right. Now, it leads us into the ever-ending question. Why is it that people that teach other kids tend to be somewhat on the liberal side? Just because they go into the profession, it sometimes seems to me, is because they're motivated a little bit to interact with younger people and teach them things. That's a very good idea. Sure. But now I'm talking politically, though, with a liberal bent in schools. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think it's undeniable, really. I mean, there's no shortage of data that suggests that the folks who go into any of the, quote, helping professions, whether it's nursing, social work, education, tend to be more left than right. I think it's slightly less true in K-12 education, which is what I focus on, than say higher education, which I don't work on that much. But I think it tends to be almost a bromide to say that teachers are more left than right. I'm not unconcerned about it. I think we should be concerned about it. This isn't the piece I wrote in Newsweek, but with my colleague Tracy Sherrah at AEI, I've written a lot about the need for for balance in education. I mean, I'm a civics teacher. I used to teach public school for years, and I've said for a very long time now, look, if you want to teach something like critical race theory, that's fine. Students should have lots of lenses to look at the world and evaluate claims for themselves. But you got to teach both sides. You know, you got to teach all manner of points of view on controversial issues. I think most parents, right or left, would agree with that. They would say, yeah, well, we want our kids to wrestle with contemporary issues because that's what you're going to do in the real world as citizens, as voters. What you can't have is teachers putting their thumbs on the scale and saying, no, this is the truth, this is the way you must look at it.
We're talking with Robert Pondicio. He is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and he has written a piece for Newsweek magazine, Education is Progressive, Schools are Conservative. By the way, you can go to the AEI website. It is on there. Well worth reading. Robert, parents, it seems to me anyway, are becoming more vigilant of what their kids are being taught in school. I think it's a good thing. There is some concern, supposedly, especially coming from the left, that these parents will become a little bit nasty at school board meetings and the like. I don't think that's really the case at all. But I want to get your take. Do you feel that parents, A, are becoming more involved with their children's education? B, is it a good or a bad thing?
Hey, look, as a teacher, the heck with being a policy analyst, but as a teacher, it's never a bad thing when parents are engaged. As a general rule, we get uncomfortable with parent engagement only when they disagree with us, right? But look, we have 13,000 school districts in this country. Either you believe in local control or you do not. And I happen to believe very strongly in local control, and I believe very strongly in parent choice. So no, it's not a bad thing at all. Now, having said that, as a practical matter, it's really hard for parents to be intimately involved in every single aspect of what happens in a child's school. I mean, this is maybe a different conversation, but a lot of us assume who are not in classrooms that you have a good sense of what's going on in classrooms just by knowing what the curriculum is or what the textbook mm-hmm. is. Well, it's a lot more complicated than that. I mean, there's good data that shows that almost literally every teacher in America, like 98% of teachers, according to one RAND study, use curriculum that they make up themselves. I should say make up, that they write themselves, they find themselves. I mean, you know who's teaching kids is Google and Pinterest. I mean, that's where the vast majority of teachers go to find curriculum materials. So the idea that you can know what's going on in the classroom just by looking at the curriculum is kind of, depending on your perspective, either a false positive or a false negative. The bottom line is there ought to be a lot more visibility into what's actually happening in classrooms, for good or for ill. But the idea that somehow parents like should just leave their kids at the schoolroom door and trust the teacher, well, you know, it's a lovely idea. Some, you know, we've all had teachers for whom we have every confidence in the world, and that's very satisfying. We all have teachers or know of teachers for whom that would not be satisfying. So it's very, very difficult to say one way or the other that we should either always trust teachers or never trust teachers.
Yeah.
We've got 4 million of them in this country. You're going to have a race.
Do you think that the parents are becoming a little bit more involved, or do you think it's about the same? I'm talking especially K through eight, basically.
Yeah. It's hard to say. I mean, this is the one thing I can say with some confidence. I think it's safe to say that public education or public schools has never been, or our relationship with public schools has never been more in play than it is right now. I mean, it's kind of a bromide in education where, you know, for decades, polls have shown that Americans really hold public education in low regard, but they really hold their own schools, their kids' school, in high regard. It's like Congress, for example. Everybody hates Congress, but they keep reelecting their congressman. Well, it's the same thing with schools. We don't like education, but we like our kids' school. Well, so if for years we've given A and B scores to local schools, now it's probably a B or a C. Now, why is that? There's a lot of reasons. We've had 18 months of COVID disruptions. We have fights over mask mandates. We have fights over critical race theory. You've had school coming into the home for the last year and a half via Zoom, where suddenly that black box of the classroom is pried open and people don't always like what they see. So it's hard to say why it's happening, but I think you're right to suggest that for whatever reason, for all of these reasons, or some of them, parents are a little bit more concerned, maybe a lot more concerned, depending on where they are, and active and activist than they have historically been.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I think is a big winner for Republicans, and for the life of me, I don't understand why they don't push it more, because I think they would turn a lot of Democrats into their way of thinking, is school choice. Because you would think inner city parents and parents in poorer areas would want that opportunity to go to a better school for their kids. I mean, it just would be a knee-jerk thing.
No question.
Go ahead on that.
Yeah. No. I mean, I wrote a book 2 years ago called How the Other Half Learns, which was an extensive report on a particular charter school in New York City called Success Academy, which has something like 6 applicants for every seat. In urban communities, and that's my background, I was a school teacher in the South Bronx and a charter school teacher in Harlem.
Wow.
You absolutely see all of these schools with you know, waiting lists out the door, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an enormous demand, precisely as you suggest, among inner city parents for simply not just good schools, but for safe schools. So you know, for many, many years in education and education reform, going back to, say, No Child Left Behind, there was bipartisan agreement about this. You know, the left wanted more opportunity for inner city schools, inner city families. The right wanted to kind of defang the teachers' union. So they agreed for a very long time on charter schools, and in particular, urban charter schools. I think that's largely fallen apart right now. But at the end of the day, when you've got a kid in school, if you're a parent, those R's and D's don't mean nearly as much to you as, is my child getting a good education? Is my child safe in school? And that absolutely will affect
those
patterns.
But that's why I say it. It's very interesting that even though they, inner city parents can see the benefits and want the best for their kids, yet they still kind of go along with the Democrats' approach, which, of course, is because they're being pulled by the unions. The Democrats are being pulled by the unions, and the unions are scared the hell out of choice and vouchers, because they feel that they got to be protective of their mediocrity, right, with their with the teachers that they have.
I mean, I've never been a union basher, but I've never been a, you know, a union supporter either. I mean, I had to be part of the teachers' union to teach in New York City. But I'm going to slightly disagree with you about the politics of this.
Okay.
I mean, I live in New York. It's a deeply blue state, and education, and you know, it's going to be a blue state as far as the eye can see. In so-called purple states, like Virginia, like North Carolina, for example, well, I think education will be a very, very big issue. I think the Virginia election has probably taught Republicans that they've got a winning issue here. That you know, independence voters in particular, who can be animated or activated by their concerns over schools, they're gonna come over to the Republican side. And if the Democrats continue to misperceive this dichotomy I'm describing, if they perceive schools as progressive and you know and not schools as conservative, so to speak, then they're just gonna they're not hearing the tune, so to speak. And if they continue to not hear it, I assume they're gonna continue to be punished at the polls.
Yeah, Robert, we could talk forever. I'm very interested in the things that you're doing. And your background is terrific, and I thank you so very much for coming on. I hope we can do this again.
Oh, anytime. It's always a pleasure.
All right, sir. Robert Pondicio, American Enterprise Institute. Very interesting guy. He's walked the walk, you know? He's taught in inner city in Bronx. We're going to take our break when we come back. House Democrats blasting through the Build Back Better BS bill. But will it go through the Senate? We're going to get some thoughts from Andrew Serrace.
For the sunshine sky, and there's a reason.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen.
And I'm Tracy Allen.
Please join us every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
You can also watch us on Facebook Live on our Good Morning Clearwater Facebook page and on YouTube. Just search Tantalk Radio Network.
Every morning we'll be talking about current events, sports.
Yay, sports.
News, entertainment, weather, and traffic. Have an opinion? You can call us.
That's right. Join us every weekday morning, 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. This is good news, by the way, for the state of Florida. If you're a conservative or a Republican, Florida now has more registered Republicans than Democrats. That is undoing the Democratic Party's decades-old advantage here in Florida. Registered Republicans around 5.1 million in Florida at the end of October. That edges out Democrats by 4,000 people. I mean, it's only a handful, but still, it's a big deal, right? Now, this comes, by the way, from the Florida Division of Elections, and kind of an interesting number. Andrew, are you excited about that news that we finally got more Republicans voting here in Florida than Democrats?
That's really good news, Paul. That means the Republicans, there's more normal people living in Florida now.
I always worried people moving down from New York and New Jersey and Massachusetts, you know, we're bringing their blueness with them, not their redness, you know. But then I'm thinking, well, wait a second. The reason they're leaving is because they're going to a place they think that, you know, right to work and lower taxes.
You know, Paul, from what I've seen, I've had a lot of new customers come in from the Northeast. And the people that have moved in don't like Joe Biden and all their policies.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's reflecting in the way the numbers are changing here. You know, they've always had, and this is always interesting, the mayor of Miami, I think, is a Republican. You know? Now, that's the biggest city in Florida, and yet the Republicans have the mayoral office, I guess because of the...
You would think that Miami should be all Republican, and they're 90% Cuban.
Well, that's it. That was what I was going to say. It's because they're Cuban down there. We don't have the same thing here in St. Pete or in Tampa, do we? We've got Democrats currently, although St. Pete goes back and forth a little bit, right? St. Pete, Florida.
Oh, my goodness. St. Pete is bad news, Paul. I won't even go to St. Pete.
I know, but
you drag me there and I won't even go.
Now, why is that, other than Charlie Crist is there?
No, it's just too many liberals. I feel very uncomfortable walking among them.
Oh, okay.
You can spot them a mile away.
Okay, yeah. So you never go to St. Pete at all?
Never.
Do you go to Tampa?
I can count on one hand.
Yeah. I hear you.
According to what my family says, I don't leave Palm Harbor.
Well, I think most of us stay around the area in general. You know, I haven't been to Tampa, and I don't even remember how long. I think I went to a hockey game there. And same with St. Pete. Very, very rare. Anyway.
Doesn't interest me, Paul.
All right.
Doesn't interest me.
Does the vote on this bill of $1.75 trillion, do you have any interest in that deal?
I think the Senate ought to dump it.
Yeah. And I think there's a good chance.
About it. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you got to watch some rhino Republicans, Paul.
Yeah. I don't think any Republican. No Republican will vote for it. They would I'm just going to say no Republican, even Romney, will not vote for this one. So
we hope not.
So,
but you never know.
So all you need is one vote from the Democrats in the Senate against it.
No, that should be Manchin.
Should be Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema.
Yep, it should be. Both of them should go against.
You know, she's very quiet. You never really hear much from her, do you? It's always Manchin leading with his chin. Kyrsten Sinema, she just kind of, she does her thing, but she's not real vocal. Kind of interesting.
You know, Paul, I still can't believe that the Rittenhouse jury still hasn't come out.
Aha! So you are interested in all of that. It's day four.
Because this kid is innocent. If you look at the records of the three people that went down, or two people that went down, the one that got shot, they should be giving this kid a reward.
I think, and it's impossible to get into their heads, but I think they're looking to convict him on a lesser charge, as in, why is a kid 17 years old walking down the middle of the street in town with a rifle? When there is all kinds of trouble going on around him, does that not conjure up the idea that he might use his rifle?
You know, Paul, they had videos of him with opportunities to shoot other people, and he didn't.
That's right, he did not.
Okay. This kid was there trying to protect his community from all the violence that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
If more kids were like him, this could be a pretty good world we're in.
I think his intentions were probably honorable. And I think he was 17 years old, he might not have thought the whole thing through, you know, as in, if I go wandering down the street with a rifle in my hand, might somebody take a shot at me or get the wrong idea? I don't know.
I have a problem with a 17-year-old and an automatic rifle. I don't know. Me. And it wasn't his community. It wasn't his community, Andrew.
First of all, it's not an automatic rifle.
It was not?
No.
It was not an AR?
An AR-15 is not an automatic.
Right. It's not like a machine gun.
Oh, okay. You still have to pump it.
You have to.
Okay.
That's fair. Go ahead, Andrew.
Okay.
So it was an automatic rifle. What do you think about a 17-year-old wandering down the street with a rifle in his arms when you know that there are people going back and forth that are very angry to begin with?
I would say he's a smart kid. He wanted to get out of the house, and he knew to protect himself.
But it wasn't his town.
What do you mean it wasn't his town? His grandparents lived 20 minutes away. He had all kinds of relatives that lived in Kenosha.
He lives in Antioch, Illinois. Just so everybody knows, Antioch is 20 miles from Kenosha. So it's not that far away. That border thing is a little bit of a red herring.
He worked in Kenosha. That's why I'm not on the jury.
No. That's all right. I think that's a good point. He doesn't live there.
The guy that got his arm blown off drove 100 miles to get there.
Right.
And he had a gun, did he not?
And he had a gun.
And he was a convicted felon.
That's right.
Okay.
The guy that got his arm blown off, wasn't he the one that did not show the gun, though, right? He might have wanted to try to take the gun away from Rittenhouse.
Right.
That was the first one that tried to take the gun away. The second guy had the skateboard, was coming after him, hit him in the head once. They got the video of that.
Right.
And then the other guy with the gun came running up and put it to his head.
Which guy got the arm blown off? The gun guy or the... Not?
The gun guy. The skateboard guy got killed.
Okay.
Anyway.
They had the pistol.
I'm kind of rooting for the kid. I think he had his head. I think he was trying to do the right thing. I really do think he thought, you know what? I don't want to see a town that I grew up in and my parents live in, et cetera, burned to the ground. So I'm going to go there and I'm going to try to defend some business. I think that's what he was thinking. Mm-hmm.
That's what he was doing. He put a fire out in a dumpster that they were pushing, lit on fire into a gas station to get the gas station to explode, and the kid put the fire out.
Yes, you're right. I saw that.
I did notice it is day four of deliberations. I don't know if you saw the pictures on the steps of the courthouse, because you've got protesters on both sides that evidently there are now tables set up. I don't know who's doing it, but somebody's trying to unite the two by selling cookies and donuts. May be a good thing, could be a bad thing, depending on who cooked the cookie and donuts. They could be used as projectiles sometimes.
Oh, I thought you meant like poisoning people.
They said that there's pallets of bricks behind some of the buildings that have been unloaded already. I personally believe the minute they start the so-called rioting, if the poor kid comes up innocent, they need to blow a couple of them away.
Let's make one thing perfectly clear.
You don't want people to die.
This is how it goes down. If people are going to protest, they will protest during the daylight hours. It's at night you have to worry about. That's when the rioters come out.
Well, first of all, sure. I think the National Guard is probably going to be the reason the city will be okay. Because people aren't going to start rioting with the National Guard standing in front of them. I don't think that will happen. So I think that's probably a good thing. I do.
Yes.
But I do think they're looking to find a hook to put this guy in jail for a few months. I don't think he's going to spend more than
We all think it's some sort of lesser charge of reckless endangerment.
I think that's what
could
it will
be introduced. But listen, Paul, if these people want to riot, they're going to riot. If they don't riot for the conviction itself, when the sentence comes down, well, you know it's going to be light for reckless endangerment. He may even have time served. Who knows? Then that's when they're just looking for an excuse.
Oh, no. There's no question that they're looking for an excuse. They are.
Like I told you guys, they're looking for an excuse to riot because it's Christmas season and they want to do their shopping. They want to get it done early.
That's right.
That's right.
That's when all them stores have that free stuff, right?
Free shoes,
mattresses.
Here's what I think. I go down there with about 500 of those store carts, and I only charge them $5 a store cart. Now, just think about it.
So you'd be out front.
I can make a lot of money.
You'd be out front.
I'll be out front as they go in.
They'd take your wad from you.
Here's your store cart. Give me five.
They'd take your wad from you.
Well, they might.
Well, you'd be pulling $5. Will you give change?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'll give them the damn cart. Anyway.
Yeah. Hey, what do you think about Biden's new popularity report?
I've got two reports. Yeah, go ahead.
36%.
Yes. It's unbelievable.
Kamala Harris is even lower.
Quinnipiac Access, he's down to 36% popularity. It's actually down a point from the month before, according to that poll. He gets his worst review on handling the economy, taking a look at this Build Back Better BS bill, and foreign policy. He should get zero on the border. I don't know how anybody votes for the border when he says, let him come through. He's basically saying that, isn't he? Let them come through. We're not going to. I'm stopping building any wall. So let them come through.
Huh? You stopped everything. Let them come right through.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's distribute them all over the place. Hey, do you know that my phone has been ringing off the hook to make sure that word gets to Ron DeSantis how happy the people are that he signed that bill yesterday? Somebody told me that Tech Data, you've heard of Tech Data?
Yeah, they're the big-time company here in the same
Well, they were definitely, must be a woke company, because they were definitely going along with Biden, and they were going to fire 600 people. And they called me last night and says, please tell the governor, his father, whatever, you get word to him how thankful we are for what he did.
Yeah. Well, I think
what did he do? What did he do? Please explain that. So
he signed the bill that they cannot be fired for not being vaccinated.
Okay. So in other words, the Tech Data cannot say to work here you got to be vaccinated.
Exactly.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, for every person they do that with, they get a $10,000 fine.
Here's my take on it, if you don't mind my saying this. If a company, which is a private thing, tells me that, hey, you want to work for me, that's fine, but you got to get that. It's like taking a drug test for the company. Oh, I don't want to take a drug test, even though I don't take drugs. Well, then you're not going to work here because that's our private policy. So I don't have a problem with Tech Data.
But, you know, Paul.
I don't.
Paul, the problem
because you don't have to work for them. You can go somewhere else.
The problem is the government is telling them to do it. If the
government
different. Never told them to do it, they never would have even thought
that's
about it.
That's different. That's different.
That's the point that we're getting at.
Yeah, but if Tech Data on its own says, look, we want everybody vaccinated, I got no problem with that.
But they didn't, Paul. Like I said, none of these companies would have even thought about it. But it's because the government is forcing it. That's the problem. In other words, the government's telling these companies, if these people want to work, you got to listen to us. They got to be vaccinated or they're out of a job.
Yeah. That one's going down in flames because that Biden cannot make a mandate. The White House cannot make a mandate. I don't think the Senate can make a mandate. That goes down in flames because that's a state's rights issue. I think the governors have more of a say on whether or not they can make a mandate. And I would even question that they can do it at this point because we are so much past, you know, we talked about this the other day. Initially, when something bad happens, like catastrophic, you can understand a martial law approach, as in, hey, we're about to be bombed. The president has said that we are going to do this, that, or you do it because it's the immediacy of the moment. But once everything, like this virus, as time goes by, you don't have that authority that the president wants to claim at that point. I think it goes back to the local people.
But you know what, Paul? Here you're putting in a mandate. It's such a terrible crisis. This has got to be done by January the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
If it's such a crisis, why are you waiting so many months?
I'm confused myself because if you're singling those people that have not been vaccinated, we've now been told that people like myself who has gotten the Johnson one and done, and I had that done in May, I've been told, or at least I believe, that I need a booster shot. Now, if I don't get the booster shot, means that my first one and done is worn off. If I don't get the booster shot, do I fall under the category of somebody who is now unvaccinated?
No.
Why?
You'd be considered a half breed.
Do I get any kind of payment for that or not?
I'm on the same boat as Ed. I've gotten the Johnson shot. Now everybody all of a sudden says, oh, I thought when I got the Johnson shot, it was like forever.
Right.
You don't have to ever worry again. Now it's like, well, it's going to wear off. We've just discovered that.
Yeah, I mean,
let me ask you guys a question. Did the polio vaccine wear off?
I don't think so, but I don't.
Vaccine wear off? No.
No. Here, I don't know enough about it. I'm wondering if the whole disease kind of vanished because there was no more carriers of it.
That's right.
You know?
And you know what? You look at the drug companies. Billions. What is it? Pfizer's $24 billion.
Okay, I'm holding in my hand here. The Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, has approved booster shots for COVID-19 for Moderna and Pfizer. Now, they've approved it. First of all, I've never liked the concept of federal government running our drugs to begin with, but they've approved it. So now the booster shots are going to be out all over the place. Can be used, by the way, for people 18 and older who have completed a primary vaccination. Here's my question. If we have Johnson, Ed, and Moderna and Pfizer have approved a booster, can we go over there and get the booster?
No, they approved those boosters for the Johnson & Johnson. They said you can mix and match.
Okay.
Yeah, well, when it first came out, they said make sure you get the same second shot than the first one. Now they're saying, no, that's all right. Just mix them up.
Listen.
Put them in a cocktail and serve them over ice.
Just remember one thing about the Food and Drug Administration, okay? They allow you to eat shrimp that is farm-raised in China that is fed pig's poop at the bottom of their farm.
Mm.
Remember that.
Yeah, well, they used to say that about chicken. Here, you know, that they're actually, you got to be, wash the chickens when you buy the chickens, right? The same deal. Because they've got their own excrement and all that stuff still, you know, in the area. Anyway, thank you so very much. A very interesting conversation. I want you to have a good weekend, my friend.
I'm trying, Paul. I'm trying.
And quickly, how is your beloved wife doing, Nicole?
She's doing good. She's off the oxygen and she gets a little weak here and there, but she's all right.
Pass on our love to her.
She's on my tail now, believe me.
Well, then she sounds like she's getting nice and healthy. Pass on our love to her.
Well, I will.
All right, my friend.
Have a good weekend. Take care.
Talk to you Monday. All right, there he goes. All right. We don't have any time for another break. Or do we need to take a break? I don't think we do, Ed, do we? Okay. I want to talk with you, Ed, because we've got the some sports coming on this weekend. The Buccaneers are coming on again, I think.
No, Monday night, so we can talk about that on Monday.
Okay, so we're okay with that. What about the Lightning?
They won last night.
They did, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were up, then they were down, and then they squeaked back.
Okay. Are there any other big issues in sports that we need to talk about?
Randy Arozarena gets Rookie of the Year yesterday.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Now, yeah. What team is he with?
Oh, that'd be the Rays.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. See, I don't know all the the players these days.
Sure would be the White Sox, maybe like that.
I know. We don't have anybody left. Although we did make the playoffs, but we didn't stay there very long.
So did we.
Anyway.
We had a cup of coffee and the free T-shirt.
I got to give kudos to Marquette University, my alma mater. They're 4-0. They beat Illinois, which was ranked 10th. Mm-hmm. Last night they beat Ole Miss, and tonight I think they're playing West Virginia. This will be a tough one for them. But they're all freshmen. Mm-hmm. They're the whole roster, because they got rid of their coach. They got a new coach, Shaka Smart. You know him. Shaka Smart. He used to be a Virginia Commonwealth. Well, you don't follow college
basketball. No, I understand why you're excited, because you know Marquette.
Yeah.
You know it. But yeah. I just people that just pick it because it's in their square or whatever it is, you know. I don't get that.
You don't have any whatever in the fight. You don't have a dog in the fight. I guess
it's not even in the room.
We got a couple of large dogs wandering around here, by the way. But that's another story. Okay, hey, it's time, Ed. By the way, this is kind of a twofer. Okay. Because we're going to do the top 10 deadliest animals, but there was another grouping that I found interesting called the top 10 world's most dangerous animals. I'm not even sure how you separate those two, most dangerous and deadliest. So what I'm going to do is when we do the 10 through 1, I'm going to give you one from each of those things, deadliest and most dangerous, okay? Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. Number 10. Number 10 deadliest is the Cape Buffalo, which I think is in Africa, and most dangerous are lions.
Mm-hmm.
Lions, by the way, kill about 200 humans a year. Did you know that? Okay.
Kill a lot of things.
They do, but they kill humans once in a while.
Depends on how hungry they are.
Yeah, or if you disturb them at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, number 9. The deadliest number 9 is a polar bear. They look so nice and friendly.
Cuddly.
They're not.
No.
And the most dangerous number 9 is a hippopotamus. Did you know a hippo kills 500 humans a year? That surprised me.
Well, if he falls on you, it's over.
It is.
I mean, I don't think they'd eat you.
They kill more than lions. All right, number eight. Number eight deadliest is the poison dart frog. Poison dart. Ever heard of the poison dart?
No.
I don't think you want to pet it.
No.
Number eight most dangerous is an elephant. An elephant kills 600 people a year, even more than the hippo. The bigger they get, the more they kill.
Okay, so I got it. So it's dangerous or deadly to humans?
Yeah, I think that's basically right. Okay. Yeah. Okay, number seven. Well, number seven, deadliest, and this is where it gets confusing. Deadliest is an elephant. Most dangerous is a crocodile.
Mm-hmm.
Which one would you rather encounter?
I don't know. How fast does an elephant run?
I'd rather encounter an elephant. You have a chance that the elephant's friendly. I've never met a friendly crocodile. And by the way, crocodiles kill 600 humans a year. Okay, number six. Well, deadliest is a crocodile. We talked about that. But the world's most dangerous is a scorpion. Scorpions kill, listen to this, 3,300 humans a year. Well, that's understandable. You can step on one because you won't see it, maybe.
Right.
All right, number five. African lion is the deadliest. Yeah. And the assassin bug, wow, what a name, is the most dangerous. It kills 3,300, no, it kills 10,000 people a year. And the reason is it spreads Chagas disease, C-H-A-G-A-S. Okay? All right, number four. Deadliest Australian box jellyfish. Well, we all knew that, right? The Australian box jellyfish. I don't even know what it is. And number four, most dangerous.
Oops.
That's all right. Number four most dangerous is a surprise. Dogs.
Dogs?
Rabies.
Oh, okay.
In some of these small, poorer countries.
Wild dogs.
Wild dog. Number three, deadliest is the great white shark. I would never want to encounter one. And the most dangerous is the Asian cobra. The Asian cobra. Yeah. Number two. Deadliest, mosquito. Well, we know mosquitoes carry disease. So we understand that. All right. And most dangerous, listen to this one. The most dangerous animal is a human. They come in second. Well, that's because they kill each other.
Sure. Just go to Chicago.
There you go. Don't make fun of my city, by the way. Say New York or something.
New York.
Thank you. All right, number one. Okay, this is confusing, but the deadliest, and they don't take into effect the humans, they take into effect the animal. The deadliest is the Asian cobra, which we mentioned earlier in the most dangerous. Are you keeping track of this?
Yep.
And you know what the number one most dangerous animal is in the world? It's a mosquito.
Wow.
So we got the mosquito and the Asian cobra. Take your pick. I would not want to encounter either one. Although
the mosquito, you'd never know.
Mosquito, I got a good chance of surviving.
Well, no, you'd never see it coming. And then when you get bit, you just think, oh, it's just regular mosquito. Next thing you know, you're keeled over.
That doesn't sound good. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back on Monday. Have a wonderful weekend. And remember, freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Facet Wealth.
I'm Steve Kathan. Voting pretty much along party lines, the House of Representatives this morning passed the giant social spending and climate bill that President Biden has been touting for months.
Grinning House Democrats, led by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi,